Have you ever had a nightmare neighbor? You know, a neighbor from hell? You know what I'm talking about. If so, we want to hear about it in our brand new podcast, Nightmare Neighbors. That's right. We got another one in the works. But we need your stories first. Go to NightmareNeighbors.com and send in your nightmare neighbor story. Or call in toll free 888-68-CRAZY. 888-68-CRAZY. And share your nightmare neighbor story with us. And we may talk about it and use it on a future episode of the Nightmare Neighbors podcast coming very soon. Maybe they're your current neighbors. Maybe they were a neighbor from years gone by. Now is the chance to tell your story anonymously. Go to NightmareNeighbors.com to share your nightmare neighbor story with us. Or call 888-68-CRAZY. And be part of the brand new Nightmare Neighbors podcast. Happy quarantine weekend, everybody. It's Tony Brisky from Real Ghost Stories Online. Today's extra episode is a live episode that I did earlier this week of not my show, but actually this is the audio from Jeff Belanger's online show, The Speakeasy. He had me and Jim Harold as guests one evening this week, and he does this throughout the week, I believe every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on his Facebook page. So if you look for Jeff Belanger's Facebook page, go ahead and follow him. You'll see he interviews all sorts of interesting folks from the paranormal world all during the week during his Speakeasy program. It's real fun. I asked him if I could take the audio from the interview that he did with me and Jim and play it back for you guys this weekend. And he said, sure. So here you go. Enjoy. It's kind of a behind-the-scenes look at the world of podcasting, how I do our show, how Jim does his show, how Jeff does his work. And it's just kind of a fun back behind-the-scenes look from some of the folks that you probably listen to on a regular basis. So enjoy. This is from earlier in the week and Jeff Belanger's Speakeasy with myself and Jim Harold.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to the Speakeasy. I'm your barkeeper, Jeff Belanger. And don't worry, there's no cover charge. We don't card anyone. And this is the place where it's always okay to drink alone, together. So I'm a podcast junkie. And I think for me, it started when I was a kid. My family used to live right near Interstate 84 in Connecticut. And I had a CB radio. And I used to love to talk to the truckers and get them riled up, to be perfectly frank. And I'd sometimes even play music for them, which it turns out is completely illegal and violates all kinds of copyright laws. However, I loved the sense of broadcasting. I love the idea that your voice, your ideas, your thoughts could go out there into the ether. And so now as an adult working in media, and also a podcaster now, like, I'm a junkie. I love them. I love to make them. I love to listen to them. And I know right now during quarantine, lots of people are thinking like, well, I want to get into this. I want to make them. And so I thought tonight I would kind of turn the tables and reach out to some of the big dogs I know who are doing podcasting and get way more downloads than I do. But, you know, good for them. So first, we're going to start with this is the guy behind Real Ghost Stories Online, The Grave Talks, and The Dark Side of Wikipedia. First, let's bring in Tony Brisky.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff.
Thanks for coming in the Speakeasy. What you drinking, Tony?
Tonight I am drinking Cava Cava, which is it's a tea that kind of tastes like mud, and it kind of gives you that nice relaxing thing if you're looking for an alcohol alternative.
I'm not.
I decided to, and I mix a little like chocolate with it, and it's not bad. It's kind of like a shake mixed with a puddle, but it's delicious.
And you described it as like mud, so that's
exactly
fantastic.
It's appetizing.
Okay, well, good. Well, then you're our designated driver tonight.
I guess so.
Excellent. Okay, so let me bring in our other guest from the Paranormal Podcast, Jim Harold's Campfire, Crime Scene, and Soulmate Stories. Please welcome my buddy Jim Harold.
Hey.
Cheers.
What do you got?
I have a triple Bloody Mary here.
Oh, only a triple.
Only a triple and a couple of beers. I didn't know how long this was, so I wanted to make sure I was prepared.
Yeah. If it's only a triple, I don't think you have a problem.
I think so. By the end, I'll be like,
no judging.
Lady.
you guys, I've been guests on your podcasts, and this is fantastic because I get to turn the tables a little bit, even though this is not like an interview. It's not like me grilling you, but I am curious where you guys were the night Kennedy was shot.
I was an egg.
Yeah, I was non-existent. I was a gleam in my father's eye. Let's put it that way.
All right. Well, we have big fans. Folks, if you're with us tonight, sound off. Tell us where you are. Say good evening. Tell us what you're drinking. We'll try to pop some of your comments up here if we can. Great to see everybody. Carl's in the UK, so it's pretty late over there. He's probably three sheets to the wind by now. And I say that with love because I've actually drank with Carl. And I drank with Jim before. We were in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And this Absolutely. Evening, I was telling my daughter, who's 13, what I was doing with the show tonight and the speakeasy. And she said, oh, Jim Harold. I said, yeah, I've known him longer than you.
Dude, I just checked. I think it was September of 2005. And I started podcasting in July of 2005. So it was like right away.
Yeah.
I found that I'm like, this guy looks like he knows what he's talking about.
Wow.
We're nice enough. First of all, I was like, what is a podcast?
Right.
But I'll do it anyway. And there were probably like seven people listening, but.
No, but you know what? Okay. So here's the thing. Back then, if you guys remember the early days, there was internet radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been on a lot of shows, internet radio shows. And a lot of them, they say like, oh, we have access to like 20 million listeners.
Right.
And you go, yes, but I don't think you're reaching 20 people.
Exactly.
Not even 20,000. Like, I'm not even sure 20. And just because you can talk doesn't mean that you should host a show.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And sometimes the conversations were so bad, I started a spreadsheet saying, never do this show again.
And then undermine you with it, really never do this show.
And then I just wrote charity case under Jim Harold. No, are you kidding me? Wait, listen, let me do, I don't mean to make you feel bad, Tony, but I'm going to make me feel bad too. So listen, I host my podcast, New England Legends, with Libsyn. I don't know, if Tony, do you do Libsyn too? Or are you?
I use Audio Boom and Libsyn. Okay. I use Libsyn for some other aspects of it.
Both fine organizations.
Yes.
Fine organizations. So anyway, folks, if you're interested in podcasting, I'm going to just throw this up. This is the Libsyn homepage, right? Check this out. That's Mike Rowe that everybody in the world knows right in the middle. And right next to Mike freaking Rowe is Jim Harrell.
How did I end up there? Something went wrong. They must have pushed the wrong button.
Dude,
but that was very nice.
Saying, like, I'm not
very
up
nice.
There. Yeah. No, but that's amazing. So back then, you're right. I remember thinking, like, but the conversation went well. And I said, look, I don't care that nobody's listening. That was actually an engaging conversation, and I'm happy to talk to you anytime. Because back then, maybe you were only reaching six people. I don't remember.
It wasn't very many. I mean, there were a few, but I mean, it was like nobody knew they even existed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. No. And then suddenly, like, it blew up, and internet radio mainly has gone away. Thank you.
Right? This is Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. We're all on the phone, and it's like cordless phones that are beeping because the battery's going to die.
Yeah.
Look at our three favorite podcasts. And you got people. Bob Heskey, who's podcasting now. He was one of your early listeners. Tony, when did you start?
About 7 years ago in the world of podcasting, because I was in radio for 20 years or so, just commercial radio.
Yep.
And I would do what I found, the way I kind of got into it was every Halloween I would do, you know, like the local ghost story type thing. And I decided I'm going to grab the audio from that and throw it up on YouTube. And I was discovering, because at the time I was doing a food blog and I had a show on Travel Channel where I was doing food stuff, that all of my views were going to the ghost stories over any of the food stuff. So I thought, I love ghost stories. And then I just started. I had no idea, you know, how to do the podcast or what was going on with it. I just used to go and stream old Coast to Coast AMs or Ghost to Ghost AMs. And I thought, when I was like doing projects around the house, and thought it'd be fun to do something like this. So I just put together a show at random. And then, oh my God, people started calling, people started writing. And, you know, obviously I know Jim had been around for quite a bit before then, but there wasn't, many other ones other than you at the time. I don't know if I was like shortly, I mean, not shortly after, but there wasn't a whole lot between other than you and me for a couple years.
The only one that I know of, there was Paracast with Gene Steinberg, and
I've
there
been
was anything ghost with Lex Wall, who Lex is still doing it.
Yep.
And then I don't know about Paracast. I I know I started Campfire after Anything Goes, but Paranormal Podcast, I think Paracast and Paranormal Podcast started right in time. But Tony, I mean, you've got those great radio pipes, and you may or may not know this. My background was in commercial radio on the other side, the business side.
Okay.
I was a frustrated person because they wouldn't let me anywhere near a mic, basically. And I said, well, I'll get, you know, those little old mics they used to have with the computers, the little white mic. It was almost like that. Not quite that bad, but it's sure. Like, they won't let me near one of these fancy mics, but I'll take my little toy mic and I'll play radio. So you were doing the real thing. And I'm like, I'm going to, since my training was in broadcasting for college, I said, I'm going to get into it. So I'd worked in radio since the early 90s, but it was selling ads.
Sure.
Of all things. So it's such a very interesting kind of similar backgrounds, but you were on the other side of the mic. That's very cool.
Yeah.
And you can tell it in that, those beautiful tones there. Oh,
thank you.
So were you, what was your show when you were on terrestrial radio?
I did everything from morning shows to afternoon drive, country top 40, you name it. Lots and lots of, you know, things where a lot of call-in type based shows. It was like your tight top 40 hit the post, meaning talking up to the ramp and being funny, that sort of stuff.
Kiss the lyrics.
Yeah, exactly. It was, you know, it's like there was morning zoo elements to it and that sort of stuff. But and that's the way I kind of describe, you know, the show that I do now with my wife, Jenny, the Real Ghost Stories Online show, for people who think we're Satanists or something. When we go into a new neighborhood and they're like, what do? We do a podcast about ghosts. I'm like, well, it's like a morning show that talks about ghosts is kind of how I describe it.
Yeah. No, and I get it. Like it's a challenge, right? So you want to put together a show. Mm-hmm. One of the things that was so hard for me with podcasts are there's so many out there that are so bad. And by bad, I'm not knocking the people doing it. I am a little bit, right. But only because if you think you could call your buddy and like just start recording it and be like, what'd you do this weekend? Worked on my car. What'd you do? Like, I don't know. I'm going through some boxes. What's the show about?
Yeah.
Right. Don't you have a plan? Don't you have some sort of focus like that I should listen? Like, is there a reason? You're not famous enough for me to care about like what you ate for breakfast.
That's right.
Yeah.
And actually, if you are famous enough, I still don't care what you ate for breakfast. Right.
Yeah. You have to niche down. You have to say this. I'm going to particularly now. I mean, you know, when I started, I was lucky because there wasn't anybody doing it. So I kind of got lucky. I could kind of feel my way through. And even by the time Tony got in, it was considerably tougher 7 years ago than it was, you know, 15 years ago when, you know, somebody with a live pulse, you know, but I guess what I'm saying is you really have to think about what you're doing and provide some value, because these days your competition are people like Tony who worked in radio. Your competition is NPR. Your competition is CNN. I mean, you're really going against the big guns these days. Now, again, some people just want to, you know, I always use the example of bottle cap collecting. The cool thing about podcasts is, let's say you collect bottle caps and you're really passionate about it. Guess what? You can do a show about bottle cap collecting. You could probably become the world's best known bottle cap collector. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to make a penny off of it. There's nothing saying you have to turn this into a business. But if you want to do something like that, you have to be very serious about it. And the more general the show, probably the less chance that it's going to succeed. It has to be very specific, very targeted. And you have to, as you said, come up with a plan with what you want to do and who you want to serve.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's always the challenge, right? And that's with any media content. Now, what's blowing me away is that, like you said, podcasting has gotten really good. Some of the production values are, you know, off the charts. They have real budgets and they're producing shows that are reaching millions upon millions of people. And just to put that in perspective, like any NPR podcast, whether it's like Radiolab or this American Life reaches more people than a vast overwhelming majority of television shows, like, right.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's the, and yet, podcasting is reaching so many more people and it's still growing like overall. And yet, we're still trying to figure out how to monetize it. I mean, anytime you can command an audience of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands or millions, you should be doing pretty well. And yet we're still trying to figure it out. And I think it's because you have a whole generation of people who grew up on the internet thinking everything's free. All content is free. Mm-hmm. Music is free. Movies should be free. You just BitTorrent it or whatever. Sure. And so we kind of have to figure out, like, and I know both of you guys have subscription services, right? Where people can have premium content. I'm doing Patreon on my content, you know, my podcast where people can get extra content. But I mean, it's, I know for me, you guys have way more listeners than I do, but for me, it's not nearly enough to even starve to death. It's just enough to cover the costs and kind of keep me going and interested, but it serves everything else I do. Right. So how did you make the leap? And I'm going to start with Jim, because I remember when you used to call me for advice, which is ridiculous now, because now I'm like, Jim, how do I get this podcast thing going? Like, how did you make the leap from working at a real job to living working the dream?
Well, the thing is, I got to say, is that it took a long time. I was like the tortoise in the hare, and I was definitely the tortoise. I started in 2005. I didn't make a penny until 2009, not a penny. And then I got the idea of the Plus Club and started the Plus Club, and that started going well, and advertising started to pick up, and I went full-time in 2012. So it literally took me 7 years podcasting before I went full-time. Now, to me, that makes me really slow. I should have been able to do it much faster than that. So, you know, I don't see myself as some great paragon of success. You know, some people now, they can flip a switch and in 6 months they're full time. So, I do think that if somebody's starting out with the idea, if I want to make this a moneymaker, maybe my full time job, the idea is to not quit your job tomorrow, obviously in this environment with COVID and everything. But even when things were good, 2 months ago,
the good old days,
the boom days.
Yeah.
Somebody said, well, I, you know, in 6 months, I want to make this my full-time career. It's like, well, unless you have some kind of pre-existing following, like you're a TV personality, radio personality with a big following, something like that. Unless you just, you know, you're like one of these TikTok people or YouTube people and you just catch fire, which doesn't happen that much in podcasting. It's going to be, it's like a long-term low yield stock. It just takes time. And then I worked a full-time job. I would come home, work another 4 or 5 hours a day. Almost. It was like working two jobs for about 3 years. So, that's how I did it. It was just a lot of sweat equity and luck, good timing, and, a great audience. And I think that my background in radio with business helped a lot, because basically, essentially, what am I running here? A little radio station. If you really think about it, there's traffic, there's billing, there's sales, there's production, you know, there's talent. Not much.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that. Come on.
But the point is basically, and the same thing Tony's doing, we're running little radio stations. I mean, you worked in radio, Tony. Wouldn't you agree that I bet you're in your day, you do almost every function that different people in your radio station did.
Completely. That's exactly how I view it. I mean, every time I create a new podcast or add something to the mix, it's like, well, it's like adding another hour of airplay, you know, and maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. Right. But you have to be consistent at it to have any sort of success at it. Yeah.
No, I get it. So, Tony, how did you make the leap? How did you get to do this full time?
Well, I had left radio about 2014 or so, and my main focus was going to just solely be on my radio and TV production business, where I make radio and TV ads. And then I started getting kind of the itch still, like, to be on the air. So that's when I thought, well, let's try the podcasting thing. And I just, like I said earlier, just doing it for fun. No idea how to monetize it. It wasn't even on my radar. It was more just like, let's try this and see if we can have fun with it. And then slowly it's like, oh my gosh, we have an audience. And then it was like, well, what can we do? Because at the time too, it was, you know, 2014, advertising dollars, as difficult as they are to come by today, even more then. And then I just started going, well, let's create something where they get an extra episode or something and see how that works. Maybe that'll like grow into something. And oh my goodness, it grew into something actually fairly quick. About a year into doing the show, we started getting what we call them EPPs, extra podcast people. And then they started supporting the show. And it was like, oh my goodness, this is great. And slowly but surely, my other business of creating radio and TV ads went from being like the main business to the not main business, and podcasting became it. And it's like, great. I love doing that so much more than recording car dealership ads. So
sale.
Yeah. So it was just, it kind of grew that way. And then the last handful of years, like literally like last 2 or 3 years, we started getting advertising dollars in through Audio Boom, who does that for us. And it's just been like, I mean, but that and having an amazing audience that's been very, very loyal to us all these years. You know, they allow, you know, me, us to do, you know, what we're super passionate about. And that's the biggest thing. You see so many shows that, like you said, where it's like, hey, let's talk about this or that. Now more than ever. And it was a thing with radio, too. You have to have a tight focus on what you're talking about. You can't be everything to everybody. Right. And you can't be upset when somebody's mad at you, because one person's going to say, I love this part of your show, but I hate that. And the next one's going to say the exact opposite.
That's right.
And you just got to go with what do you think is your best representation of yourself and who you want to be and how you want your show to go, and stay consistent, because you're not going to make money at it right away. It's going to take time, and you got to stick with it. But at the same time, you know, you got to know when to throw in the towel too. If a format is not working or a show's just not working, okay, great. I'm going to take my efforts and my time and reinvest it into another show. We just recorded a first episode today of a new show called Nightmare Neighbors. And it's all about neighbors who are, you know, neighbors from hell. And we had so many ideas on this with COVID and everything, because people are kind of going through that.
Right.
So that'll be launching in a handful of weeks. But, you know, there's only so much time in a day to make podcasts. But so that's my long-winded answer.
No, I get it.
I would like to chime in on something you said, and I agree 110%. You cannot minimize the importance of the audience.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it's the same thing for you, Tony. These people are, they don't feel like friends. They are friends.
They are, yeah.
And they're my bosses. They're the people that have made it possible for me to do this full time. And I'm, you know, it's fortunate to have a job where you could, these days, to work from home and all that. And the people I have to think about, and I appreciate sponsors and everything, but at the end of the day, it's the audience. With no audience, there's no sponsors. So it's on a business level, it's on a professional level, it's on a friendship level. Mm-hmm. And I can't thank my audience enough. They're the best. Now I would like to have more of them. We need more of them. Give me more. Give me more.
Yeah.
But, so tell your friends and neighbors. But I from the bottom of my heart, I'm just so thankful. Sometimes I get choked up when you see the feedback from the audience. And I'm not, it's not like this false thing. It's true.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, these people. They really like me.
It's such an intimate thing, right? It's different. If you're, and by the way, you know, the irony is that, like, you guys worked in radio, right? You know who killed radio? These three guys right here, right? Like, radio is dying because Spotify killed music stations, podcasts killed talk stations, right? They're just, I mean, there's a few still hanging around, but they're going to die, right? I mean, people still want the content. Well, that hasn't changed.
The problem with radio, they've eviscerated the talent.
Yeah.
You know this, Tony. Radio went to something called People Meter. And then all of a sudden, a program director was breathing down your neck saying, well, you talk 7.2 minutes. You really need to only talk 3, because at this point, people tune out. And the thing is, the only value proposition that traditional radio has, two things. One, well, live and local. One, it's local, so they can quickly react to local events. But guess what? They've stripped the staff to the bone, so there's nobody to react to the local events and the great talent and the great personalities. But instead of relying on that, they've gone the cheap route. They've gone to syndicated programming. They've gone to what they call voice tracking, where somebody will come in and record a 4-hour shift in like 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So there's no, it's all just very, you know, here's a song from the Bee Gees or, you know, whomever.
Yeah.
I mean, they've taken what is special about radio and they've basically castrated it, more or less, for lack of a better term.
Totally.
And so it's people are tuning to things that resonate with them, and people who, you know, they're not looking at a stopwatch or a clock and saying, well, I could talk for 7.2 seconds, but I better not talk too long or somebody will tune out. We're much more organic. We're much more natural. Mm-hmm. Sometimes maybe we drone on too long, like this answer. But the point being that we're real, we're authentic.
It reminds me, and I say this a lot, it reminds me of what radio was years ago, as far as the audience and host relationships. Because towards the end of being in radio, when I left it in 2014, we were such a throwaway product, because the product had suffered so much because the stations had just been, you know, just the staffs were cut and talent was gone. And it was like, well, I could listen to you or Pandora and I don't care which one I listen to. So there was no, like, nobody cared if you're standing out at a car dealership with t-shirts or anything. But getting back into podcasting and seeing that relationship and that excitement that the listeners have and the excitement that we have to be interacting with them about a topic we're passionate about and are very interested in reminds me of like my first years in radio in the 90s, where it was like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting and fun and people are happy and they want to talk and you want to talk to them and it's genuine. So if we're being, you know, the new thing, although it's been around now, we have some years on it, but it's still like, it feels the excitement of what old radio was is what podcasting is right now.
And what's great about it too is that you can do anything. Yeah. There's no rules. If you want to swear, well, whatever, you can, right? I mean, if you want to do, like, I love what like Radiolab does. I'm a fan of Radiolab.
Sure.
And I loved, like, when I started my podcast, I didn't want to take guests, right? That was one of my things. Like, what's the wild card in this? Guests, if they're really great, you have an amazing show. You just got to ride the wave. And I remember this from my 30 odd minutes days, like a million years ago, right? If you had a guest that was just like, I don't know, what do you want to ask me? And like one word answers and you're like, oh no,
yes.
These 30 odd minutes feel like 30 odd hours, you know? And so like the challenge is, how do I get a good interview out of someone that's just not good at being interviewed? And that's one of those things that I tried to remove with my podcast. Of course, mine's like 12 minutes long and it's scripted and it's got, you know, actors and sound effects and stuff like that. So whatever, it's all, I mean, I'm a control freak, I admit it. And so it's all completely under my control. But I also am really enjoying doing these speakeasies because I love that it's live and it's not edited and that we get to feel that like organic energy of the back and forth of a discussion, and there's drinks involved, so we kind of can't lose there. But that's the challenge, right? So how do you make great content? How do you connect with the audience? And it's so intimate, right? Of all the things I do, like if I'm in front of an audience telling stories, which is still my favorite thing to do, there's a connection there and it's great, but it's not the same as me being in your earbuds or in your car when you're going to work and it's just me and you. Like that is really an intimate, cool connection.
You know, I had this experience in reverse. Last year, one of my idols, because see, there's paranormal me. I mean, I've been interested in the paranormal since In Search of and Leonard Nimoy. So that's a lifelong interest. I was very small in the 70s, very small, very young. But the point being, I met one of my podcasting idols who had nothing to do with the paranormal, Leo Laporte, who started this tech network called Twit. Back a few months before I started, I followed him from when he was on Tech TV. And actually, if you look at my setup here, it looks very similar to his. It is a coincidence. I'm in a paneled like old school den here, and it looked very much like his verse setup. And I've just always modeled what I've done after him to a certain extent. Now, the thing is, I've listened to this guy, if you count Tech TV, on and off for 20 years. And I met him at Podcast Movement. It was so weird because I was like, hey, Leo, it's me, Jim. And it's like, he doesn't know who I am. Right, but I feel like he's one of my very good friends because I've listened to him countless hours. I feel as though I know him. Yeah. And even though, I mean, I should know this better than almost anybody in the sense that I worked in radio and everything. He doesn't know who the hell I am. But I felt like I knew him, and it was just so powerful. Right. It was such a really like mind trick on myself. I'm like, this is so weird because I totally feel like, and I talked to him. He was very polite and very nice, but I was probably thinking this guy's a little too excited, but I mean, it was total fanboy time. And I love that guy.
Jim, sorry. I was with you in, where were we? Where did we meet in person?
Kent. Was it that Kent in Ohio?
Kent Paracon. And hey, man, look, I watched someone walk up and they're like, you're Jim Harold from the Paranormal Podcast. Like you were on the other side of that. I was there. I saw it. And I'm like, yeah, he is. Look at him. Get his autograph. Take a selfie.
What a disappointment. No.
I know.
But I got to say, Dave Schrader had a great comment about his favorite guests. He said about the ones pulling teeth. That was so funny. Dave, the great host of Darkness Radio. And so
he was in here earlier. He was saying hi. Okay, we have a couple questions to get to. I'm sorry, folks. You've been asking. Let me jump to a couple. Bob Heskey wants to know, what's your most uncomfortable interview? The guest from hell. It's totally cool if you want to not say their name or like rhymes with like Schmef Belanger, like whatever, right?
I'll let Tony go first.
Yeah. Oh, because you got to think about it. Okay.
I know my answer.
Oh, it's one that never aired. I don't remember exactly the location. It was a haunted lighthouse, and I put haunted in quotations. And it was for the Grave Talks. And yep. I somewhat screened the interviews. We have a little conversation beforehand of, hey, let's get an idea of where we're going to be going with the interview. But I like to reach out to people that maybe have never been interviewed too, because sometimes you can find some of the most interesting stories that way.
For sure.
But I don't remember how I came across this lighthouse or this gentleman, but I reached out saying, hey, I've heard some stories about this lighthouse, paranormal stuff. This is a ghost show. It was very clear what the interview is going to be about. And we're talking, I like to talk about the history for a while too, for as long as, you know, we can to really kind of establish it. And we get 15 minutes in and then like, okay, well, what was the first, you know, reported paranormal incident there? Was it something that you had, or was it the previous caretakers or what not? And the response is, I don't think it's haunted. I don't.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that maybe you don't think it, but I understand that. But what about some of the other people who've had experiences there? I never heard of any experiences. There's 20 minutes of my life I'll never get back.
Yeah.
But it was funny. Just like, how did you miss the fact that this is a paranormal show you're coming on and all of our communication for the last week? And then suddenly like, huh?
Yeah.
So that was probably the worst.
Some people lose their mind, I think, when they get on the record and they think, oh, shoot, people are going to think I'm foolish. I've interviewed people where they said, no, I had this ghost experience and this and that. I can think of this Halloween thing I was doing with the Boston Globe. And I said, let's go to this building and talk to this guy. I've already talked to him. And so we get there and he goes, I don't believe in ghosts. And I'm like, you lying son of a bitch. Like, I'm calling you a liar. You did a week ago. And now the reporter from the Boston Globe's here and you're an old timer and you think you're going to look like a fool instead of just saying what you saw and experience. I'm not asking you to pontificate on the hereafter. Just say I was here and I saw that, but not anymore. I was like, oh, I'm done with you. That's that. All right, Jim, guess from hell, go.
Well, I'll give you two. One instance, not funny at all. I've had sometimes on some of my premium shows, I'll occasionally put out a thing there about, we'll talk about conspiracies like JFK assassination, stuff like that. But I keep it pretty mainstream because some of the conspiracy stuff can go into a dark corner. And
yeah.
I don't like going there and, you know, a lot of that stuff, you know, I don't go for. So anyway, I had this guy on a couple of times. I've had people on. And then all of a sudden, like the interview took like a 90 degree turn and took a dark turn and they started casting aspersions about these people or those people. And in both cases, and granted, I've done over 2000 episodes over the last 15 years. So this has happened to me twice, but both times it's okay. Interview done. Thank you. Thank you. And then, oh, well, another one person said, I know what it is when you work for the big media. I'm like, no, I'm looking around. I don't see any big media. You just don't talk that crap on my shows.
Yeah.
So bye. Thank you very much. So
let me interrupt for 1 second. Like you do have some responsibility.
Of course.
Because
this is an excellent point. Let me expound on this, particularly with COVID, for example. I made a point to tell people, go to the CDC site, check it out and so forth. And Tony can appreciate this because he knows, and I think radio people can appreciate that. Sometimes new podcasters don't. When you do this, you do have a responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're out there putting out dangerous information or maybe a conspiracist who goes into hate speech and stuff, I mean, that's like a mini radio tower to me.
Yeah.
And I treat it the same way. That's why on my main shows, no cursing. Broadcast mm-hmm. standards all the way. Now, I think that's fine. You know, I've had a couple instances where we had guests go into some darker areas and maybe, you know, about different ghost experiences like Incubus and Succubus. But I'll put a disclaimer at the beginning. You know, 99% of my shows you can listen to with your kids, not this one. So I really think it's important to think of this as like a little mini radio tower. And don't put anything across this that you wouldn't put on that mini radio tower or in the public square. So I think it's very important. So yeah. I guess I'll get off my soapbox, but now I'll tell you the funny one.
Okay. Well, hold on one thing. My background's in journalism. I started as a newspaper reporter.
Of course.
And so when the whole internet came out, and like, there's a few people that I haven't quite blocked them on Facebook or whatever, but the stuff they put up, I'm like, you know, Big Bob's News is not a real news service, right? Like it's like the stuff you're putting up, it's just hitting an emotional center in you. And not only that, they're putting up like these YouTube videos, and I know it's a virtual set. I've seen them for sale online. They're like $80 and you need a green screen, and it looks pretty darn good. It looks like it could be ESPN or something. And these folks are like spouting off whatever, but it agrees with whatever position you have, and people are posting it. And I'm like, you're now a publisher. As soon as you share a post,
that's right,
you're acting like a publisher and not a very responsible editor who didn't fact check this one iota. And so I think, like, just to reiterate what you said, if you're broadcasting, if you're publishing, if you're putting something out there for public consumption, you have a responsibility to take it seriously enough to at least, like, you know, disclaimer if you got a disclaimer, fact check if you got a fact check, or just kill it. If it, like you said, if it just goes to a place where you're like, look, hate speech and stuff like that, actually, it has nothing to do with anything other than your own bigotry.
That's right.
Right?
That's
right. So anyway,
and
okay,
I'll say one. I want to make one point.
Go.
Cursing is not bad, as Fuck long no. as you say, hey, expect cursing on this show.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's I know. And that's fine. I mean, people know that it's a grown up show.
Yeah.
And that's
right.
Great. I love Stern. You know, I mean, I have no problem with it. I'm not prude. It's just the way I run my particular show. Now, start a show where I curse like a sailor, but I mean, I will be sure to tell people, hey, this is not the one you want to listen to with the kids.
No, in my New England Legends podcast, we never curse. Because I know there's tons of kids that listen, because we hear all the time, like, I listen with my kids. My kid listens, my 13-year-old. And I'm like, I'm not going to say anything I don't want her to hear.
That's
so
right.
I get it. But in the speakeasy, we're having drinks. It's okay.
Oh, yeah. Fuck
all right,
yeah.
Tell us the funny one.
Oh, my God.
You're on the record now.
I'm the one not swearing. Oh, my God.
Bad word?
You said a bad word. You better hand over a dollar there, buddy.
And I said the mother of all curse words. Oh, my God.
All right. No, tell the funny one, because we have more questions. Hurry up. Be more succinct.
The funny one. Yes, the program director over there. The funny one was this guy said, and I'm not going to say who he was, but he said, yeah, you know, one day I was in my office and it was very cold. So I decided to teleport to the Bahamas and have some drinks with some young ladies in bikinis.
Sounds good.
Then I came back after a couple of hours and I'm like, okay, all right, that's fine. And I think that, you know, I used to think about Art Bell and I'm like, my God, how does he do this? Because there's no way that all these people can be correct. But you have to say, look, at least the way I approach is I'm interviewing someone. Doesn't mean I necessarily agree with their theories, but as long as they're not in that nasty area that we talked about before, let them put their theories up, let people, you know, as long as we're not talking really anything dangerous or crazy, let people decide for themselves, you know, because maybe they're right about UFOs and maybe I'm wrong about what I think. Maybe they're right about Bigfoot, you know, as long as they're not dangerous or anything, I let people say their piece. Now, I personally don't believe this guy teleported, but if he believes it.
Oh, allow me to challenge you, Jim Harold. Have you ever had a guest so boring, so awful that you teleported to the Bahamas and had drinks with ladies where you're like, well, someone's droning on and they're like, and then I started writing my first book and you're like, hello, hi. Right? Well, maybe he did. All right, hold on. We got another question. Carl in the UK, he said, do you need to have the voice? Do you got to have the boss jock pipes to say good morning? Of course, with a British accent. He's got a passion for the paranormal. What do you suggest for a little show in the UK? Want to improve and make it better? What do you do?
My opinion would be, if it's your passion and you're into it, you know, you don't have to have the pipes. The passion is the biggest thing, and be prepared to be consistent. That is the biggest thing I would say to anybody jumping into the world of podcasting. Don't expect to make money anytime soon. So be prepared just to have fun. Do it because you love it, not because you want to make money and it sounds like it's a passion thing. And then stay on topic. Find your area of interest in the paranormal and stick with it. And if it's intriguing enough, if you have enough stories, if you have enough people that you can bring on, whether it be listeners, guests, whatever it may be, you know, you could probably go places with it, but the consistency, it can't be something where it's like, I'm gonna do a podcast. It's funny, you look at some podcasts and you look at the dates of like the day they dropped, and it's like, oh, May 26th of last year, and then at Christmas time. It's like, that's not how you do a podcast.
That's so true.
Yeah, it's like weekly, daily, whatever it is, but stick with it.
Yep.
I couldn't agree more. You know, I've had people come to me for consulting. And the thing I say is that if before you start a podcast, you got to realize just for one podcast a week, you're going to be spending a few hours a week. Mm-hmm. If you're serious about it, and that's for one show. So if you think you're willing to do that, then let's go forward. But if you don't, you know, you don't want to spend all this money and take all this time, and then you do one show and you think, boy, this is work. And I think that the trap that people get into, I think a lot of people out there could do a fantastic podcast. Mm-hmm. I think that I could be a decent, you know, I could have been a decent athlete if I wanted to, but I'm not, because I wasn't willing to. I kind of look kind of around because I'm not willing to put in the time and the effort. So, I mean, it really comes down to your passion. If you're willing to put in the time, I think most intelligent people could do a podcast, but most people aren't willing to put in the time and to learn the craft, because they say, well, podcasting is easy. But if you mean by podcasting, putting up a file, seeing it published, and yeah, I can download it on my other phone. Yeah, that's actually pretty easy these days, particularly with things like Anchor. If you add the word well in that sentence, then it suddenly becomes much, much tougher, like anything else in life.
I'll say this too, Carl. I think it's worth investing in some decent equipment. And by that, I mean, if you're serious about it, right? It's like, I can't tell you guys how many times I've spent money on something and said to like my wife, I don't golf. All right. Because you know how expensive golfing is, like to buy the clubs and the greens fees and all that.
Yeah.
So if I need like a $200 mixing board, I'm like, well, I don't golf. That's like one golf club. Right. Would you rather I take up golf? So like a decent mic, you know, headphones, like not a lot. Like I think you can spend hundreds, not thousands of dollars, and get yourself set up, but it makes a difference. When you hear someone, it sounds like they're on like a little $20 voice recorder and it sounds like they're talking into a tin can. It's really hard for some people to hear past that, right? It's worth investing a little bit in the quality of the sound, and then, you know, learning the equipment and you know, there's free software out there that can help you modulate and help you, you know, do a little post-production and clean it up a little bit. That stuff goes a long way. And what it does is it's like, imagine going on a job interview where you just came from the gym. You might get the job. You might, right? But wouldn't you rather clean it up a little bit? Wouldn't you rather like take a shower and groom yourself and like put on some good clothes? Makes sense. And before you step in front of that interview?
And it doesn't need to be expensive these days. I mean, you can get an ATR 21. I think they came out with a new one, ATR 2100X or something. That's like $99, or it used to be $60-$70. A Samson Q2U. And they're nice because you can use them if you have a bigger setup with like a mixer, or if you just want to go straight into USB. So you don't have to break the bank to come up with decent sound. I think that's more important now than it certainly was when I started, because, you know, the competition was other people like me starting it. But now you're right out of the gate, you're going up against NPR, and ain't nobody going to beat their sound. So you got to be at least in the ballpark. I agree 100%.
But you want to do something that's kind of innovative. Like, I get how, okay, so I learned to play guitar when I was a teenager, and you learn to play guitar by trying to emulate the people you admire, right? So like I wanted to play along with a record, and I'm like, that's great. But there already is a Led Zeppelin. There already is Grateful Dead, right? Like that they already exist. So I get that you're going to want to probably sound like one of your favorite podcasts, but the next thing is to find your own voice and have your own way of storytelling and your own way of interviewing, or whatever it is you want to do. Like you've got to put some innovation on it. And it's hard, right? It's really hard, because like you have to come up with a formula. The reason television shows work, for example, is because there's a formula. They become familiar. Oh, this is the setup. This is the conflict. This is where the resolution happens. And this is where we ride off into the sunset. And a really good show has those familiar elements. You know the different parts of it. The characters are familiar. And like in your case, the host. And that's how this stuff kind of comes together. And sticking to it, you're so right. So when I started my podcast, we've gone 140 weeks without missing putting out a new episode every Thursday at noon, 140 weeks. That's Christmas, sickness, health, Halloween, travel abroad.
Pandemics.
Like, yeah, pandemics, right? Well, so right now, unfortunately, we've had to do a couple of best of episodes. But still, we have a unique message saying, hey, until we can get back out there, here's this episode and here's a little comment on it.
Sure.
But yeah, you got to keep at it. You got to keep, because people will get out of the habit that quick. So anyway, that's a super long answer. Carl, David has a really good question for us. There it is. How do you cope with the guests that you know are fabricating a story? I can speak to that too. I'll let you guys go first. I know you've both addressed this as something that happens in your podcast, but how do you actually deal with it? So, let's start with you, Tony. Someone tells you a story and you're like, I teleported to the Bahamas and, spoke to, you know, the mothership aliens and whatever. Like, what do you do?
If it makes it to air, I do try and screen now more than I used to. So every once in a while, something gets through where you're like, oh, midway through the story. I'd like to be surprised. So I don't like try and read everything thoroughly is through. But I sometimes you do get one of those. You're like, okay. You just kind of got to let somebody tell their story. And that's where it kind of goes back to the Art Bell thing, where you remember listening to that, you know, going to bed as a kid going, he can't be seriously believing this, but you handle it with respect. And sometimes you have someone you can tell is just, they're trying to pull your chain. And quite honestly, that happens far fewer times than I ever thought would.
That's right.
I thought it was going to happen left and right. It's rare that I get somebody that I think is like pranking us. Yeah. But I you certainly do get ones where it's more so, this person has a mental illness and you want them to be able to get help. You want to be able to address things if it's appropriate to say, I believe you felt that this happened. Maybe you should look at it from this perspective too, and really be a friend, be a voice of someone who's listening. Because chances are for a lot of these folks, if they're coming to you on the show and they're opening up their heart and it is borderline, there's something somewhat not clicking here. You're one of the few people who are going to be listening to them. So that voice of not making fun of them and not being you're insane or anything like that. We would never say that. It's a like, hey, here's some other ways of thinking about this. Here's some other ways of looking at it. And hopefully that helps them, but it's always done with respect. If I do have one where I just know they're pulling your chain and we've gotten it on the air, you just kind of move on to the next thing kind of quickly. But for the most part, it's always with respect and try to let them, you know, get their voice out there.
I agree 100%. First of all, I delineate between guests, expert guests, and that teleportation was an quote expert guest who came on and told me that story. So that's a little bit different than campfire. And like Tony, I thought with campfire, I thought, oh, every other caller is going to be a, you know, fake. They're trying to mess with me and so forth. I could probably count on one or two hands the times that I thought somebody was trying to legitimately snow me.
Yeah.
And the thing is that the vast, vast majority of people are expressing something. And many people, and I'm sure they tell you the same thing, Tony, I never told anybody this. This happened 30 years ago. I've never told anybody, but I'm coming out to you because I feel that I'll have a sympathetic ear. So that's why I try to be. It's like, I never laugh. I never smirk. I never make a joke of it because it's not a joke to them. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a guy who came on and said, well, I saw a leprechaun. Now, the on the face of it, you're like, oh, that's, he didn't see a leprechaun. But if you think about it, a couple of things. One interesting thing he said is that decades later, he told his brother about it. And his brother said, oh, you saw him too.
Yeah.
Now, but the other piece of that is this. Okay, maybe it wasn't actually a actual leprechaun with a shillelagh, but maybe it was some kind of looking for me pot of gold. Maybe it was actually some other kind of entity or other kind of creature that he actually did see, but his mind, because I think our mind is humans, we try to categorize things, we put it in a certain category. So who am I to say that they didn't see it or they did see it? I mean, my family has had some very strange experiences. I've had some strange experiences. So I'm not the arbiter if this happened to them or not. I tried to take it on faith. Now, I have had a few callers where I thought people were obviously, like, one was using like a Howard Stern catchphrase. They kept using it. And it's like, I listen to Stern too. Thanks.
Yeah, right.
It's like I didn't air that one. There had been a few more. But the point is that I'm not judge and jury. I'm there to provide a sympathetic ear and somebody to listen, because in more cases than not, these people have had a lifetime where people didn't believe them. They need somebody who does.
Well, the other part of it too is so there's a limitation to the English language, and you sort of touched on this. So he used the word leprechaun because that's all he knows. That's the word he has for the thing he saw. Someone else would say like a puckwudgie, and someone else would say a brownie or a fey folk or whatever. And so, no, that's totally the limitation, but I get it too. So I mean, working on Ghost Adventures, I talk to people all the time that are potentially wanting to share their stories. Now my guard has to be up because I'm the gatekeeper. Right. So if someone's telling me a story, do you just want to meet Zach and get on the show, or do you really have a story? And there have been a few people where I've said, like, I flat out don't believe them, and they don't go any further. Like, that's
well, it. The good thing about me, I ain't Zach. Nobody's dying that much to talk to me, so I don't have to worry about that.
So wait, one other quick story. So I've been a guest on Coast to Coast a few times with George Norrie, you know, and if when you do the whole show, when you do that third, the last hour where they let the call-ins happen.
I've done it.
Yeah. So you've done it, right? So George is great, right? George is George for a reason. But I love when it's that last hour and someone calls in with a story so wild. They're like, you know, yeah, and then I'm driving, and next thing I know, you know, the alien's in the truck and my house is haunted and then my head's spinning around. And George takes this deep breath and goes, what do you think of that, Jeff?
Yeah, that's exactly. Jim, what is going on there?
That's a tennis match. That's George Norrie going, exactly. Yeah, I'm out. You got this, Jeff. It's your show for the next 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. Exactly.
That's anyways, true. He does that. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
I would too. What's going on there, Jim?
I don't, yeah, what do you think that is there? Like, I, you know.
Well, it could be any number of things, George, while I'm thinking to stall for an answer.
Yeah, like, I'm gonna, and I'm pretty tired. All right, we have another good question. So Diana wants to know, would a new podcaster do well to record some practice episodes?
It's a good idea.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Pro podcasters record practice episodes. You know, anytime, at least in my world, if we're about to do a show or thinking of a concept, I record a whole bunch of practice episodes, and with the intent, maybe they'll air, maybe they won't. The newer show that we just put together called The Dark Side of Wikipedia, which is a kind of a true crime, dark history type show. We read through a Wikipedia entry, break it up, and then comment through it. And the original inception of it was just me reading the entry in like the creepy Keith Morrison type voice. And I recorded like five episodes and I'm like, it just doesn't feel right. And then, I had a dream one night that I was doing the show, and then it was just more of the format of back and forth, but breaking it up. I'm like, that's the show. And then in my Asperger self was like, we have to record it right now. So, so we went and started recording it that day. But yeah, I mean, you got to develop a show. Anybody has to do it. You got to go through the practice rounds and record them, keep them. You may use them, you may not, but that's how you're going to kind of get the feel for the show and at least the format, if you will, of the direction of where you want it to go, what works, what doesn't work. And you got to be honest about it too. If something's not feeling right, don't keep going down that road.
Oh, and one, just to finish that thought, not only do you have to record them, you actually have to listen to them.
Oh yeah. Air check. Air check.
Play it back.
I actually have someone now. I mean, the thing is that, you know, Tony, if you're doing four or five shows a week and you have to also listen to them, and then sometimes, honestly, you could tune out a little bit when you're listening because you've already heard it two or three times, once editing, once actually doing it. I have somebody that works for me part-time, just, you know, independently a few hours a week, and she listens to the shows. And I have her listen to the shows and log the shows for commercials, and I have her listen for mistakes because I might miss something.
Sure.
And, you know, I always like, I'm afraid, like, you know, accidentally a show will go out and I'll drop the F-bomb, for example.
Mm-hmm. Like you did tonight, you dirty birdie.
Yes. I can't believe that. But anyway,
I'm going to make it my ringtone.
That's right. The point being,
getting a phone call.
You got to triple check everything. You got to triple check everything.
No, you do. And I think I know I'm only speaking for my own podcast for New England Legends. When I tell people to go check it out, I usually say at this point, I'm like, start around episode 30, I feel like we didn't really have our feet on the ground yet. We were still really working it out and learning our voice and learning the chemistry. And now, I mean, it's still evolving. Did you guys ever see the documentary Hero Dreams of Sushi on Netflix?
Well, you did not see that.
Okay. It's okay. So it's Japanese subtitles, the whole thing. I can't recommend it enough for people who make anything. This guy happens to make sushi, and he's like one of the most renowned sushi chefs in all of Japan. Tiny little restaurant with like a 4-month wait to get in. And I'll sum up the whole movie for you. But he says, look, you know, I've been making sushi since I was like 15 years old, and the guy's in his 80s now. And he said, you know, in the beginning, you get better in giant chunks. Just like if you learn an instrument, for those first 6 months, you are making giant leaps and getting better at that instrument. But then what happens is those giant leaps are done. You're getting more proficient.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he said, now at this point, he says every piece of sushi he makes, he tries to make just a little bit better than the one he made before. And the improvements come in tiny increments now. That's because right. He's been doing it a long time. And so I still look at everything I do. Every time I write a script for Ghost Adventures, every time I'm working on my podcast, every time I'm working on a book, how can I make this better than the last thing I did it? I worked on. And to me, that's always the challenge. And that's the thing that keeps me driven and motivated and working on the next thing. How can I tell a story a little bit better? I'm fortunate in that when I do like my story stuff, I get to tell stories in front of an audience. And man, I'm changing them 100 times. You know, like you tell it one night and you're like, that was okay. But if I move this here and that there and switch that around, I bet it would land better, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you try it the next night and you're like, almost there. One more switch. Got it. Right. And I mean, this is the magic of like this live interview thing, is that you do your best given what you have. And that's kind of cool too. There's always some sort of energy to that. So
I'm always trying to do a better job. And I also am constantly like buying equipment to try to tweak my signal chain and Megami cables and all stuff to make it sound just a little bit better, a little bit better. By the way, Tony, what mic is that? That sounds great.
It's a Rode.
It's the Rode.
Rode N1, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I am so
I'm a
horrible equipment person. When people ask me these things, I'm like, I don't know.
See, I'm the opposite. Yeah. I'm like, this is the Lewitt 440 viewer.
And I'm horrible at that.
No, I love that stuff. I love that stuff. So I have like a cabinet of like probably a dozen microphones. And every time I get one, I tell my wife, well, this is the microphone. Mm-hmm. She said, that's what you said the last seven times.
So it's like dude, you can have my excuse that you don't do golf.
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, very too bad. Bit. That's, you might want to drop it, because then you can say, look, I don't golf. I'm going to buy a new microphone instead of like this new $400 club. Right. Okay. I've been using that excuse forever and ever. I mean, it's timeless. It always works.
You could just buy like new keyboards all the time.
Yeah. No, right. No. But that's the thing, right? You're always looking to get better at what you do. How do I reach more people? Because the thing is that people may, this is something I think about, right? It's the same amount of work to reach 10 people as it is to reach 10 million.
Yeah.
Right. You're putting in the same effort, the same amount of time. You'd just much rather reach 10 million.
I'm never happy. You know, I listen to my shows now and I'm not happy with them, let alone ones I made 5, 10, 15 years ago. It's like, Joe Rogan would have done this better. You know, so-and-so, Leo Laporte would have done this better. You know, NPR makes it sound this much better. And I think, see, to me, and again, success is relative. If I look at a Leo Laporte or a Joe Rogan, I'm a joke. But I'm doing okay for what I'm doing. But it's like, I think people who... You ask what it takes to make this work. I think part of it is that whole focus on anything is continuous improvement, always wanting to get better. Right. And always that, you know, you think about these great athletes and you think about at some point they're competing against themselves. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm saying I'm not by any means in that category, but I always want to get better. I want Jim Harrell 2020 to be better than Jim Harrell 2017 and so forth and so on.
We can write off Jim Harrell 2020. Let's just skip ahead to 2021 or 2019, whatever. Okay, we have a question from David Schroeder. Schroeder.
Never heard of him.
You know, I think that it, for me, no, but the same take on it. I'd like to see like some different takes on Bigfoot. For example, to me, the idea that there's a biped running around the Northwest is fascinating. But I'd like to hear something new.
Yeah.
So it's not the topic per se. It's I'd like to hear a new angle on it.
I think the most common one that a lot of us, I'm sure you're aware of this too, is the constant, oh, shadow people are demons, or something is if it's dark in color, it's demon, and that, that everything goes to that so quickly. So, I mean, some of that, at the same point, there's so many interesting things that I think have come across, at least on my program in the last year or two, because I always have like idea of the ghost family tree, where it's like, oh, it keeps expanding, you know, more and more every year. So many more questions than I ever have answers for. Right. And there's been some interesting ones in the last year that I would love to expound upon more. And that would be like some of those where it's the living almost being the ghost, where they, and it's, it kind of goes into astral projection a little bit, but not so much like, hey, I went to the Bahamas to go hang out with bikini clad women, but more so like I had this dream. I was at my, my old house and I saw these people having a campfire. And I, it was just weird. I, you know, that's a dream you'd have of like going to your old home, but then they actually went to their house to say hi, kind of like the Miranda Lambert song. And oh my God, it's the damn people from the dream of this kind of this thing where it's like the living being ghosts. And it's a weird thing, but I've gotten so many calls and stories in the last year on this kind of thing that I had not gotten 5 years prior. So I'm kind of giving you the opposite answer, Dave, of what you were looking for, but it's, you know, I'm always open to so many things, but those are some things that are spiking up for me as being like, this is interesting. I want to hear more about that.
I think that's interesting because Dave actually came on my show and told a story, and I can't remember exactly, but I had a similar call into Campfire, kind of along the lines of what you're talking about. This guy said when he was a little kid, he was in his family house. He saw this figure in the kitchen with a hood making a peanut butter sandwich and scared the hell out of him, you know? So then several years later, when he's a teenager, he's in the kitchen making a peanut butter sandwich and looks, and there's this little kid, what looks like a little kid running down the hall. So he was seeing it like he was haunting himself.
Almost. Yeah.
And Dave had a very similar story, which I can't remember, about an old lady and something very similar. But it, all that gets to me and kind of your point, Tony, you know, people say, you know, when I started this in 2005, I thought, oh, 6 months, this will be great. I'll talk to Brad Steiger. I'll talk to all these smart people like Jeff Belanger. I have this all figured out. 15 years later, I have more questions than answers. And I think reality is, you know, we kind of think ghosts, UFOs, we get these little silos. I think the truth is so much bigger and so much wider than we can even conceptualize. And I don't think it's, I know, Jeff, a lot of times you deal in legends, but I think this stuff is real. But I think that it represents something that is bigger than our thinking. And that we're kind of like Plato in the allegory of the cave. We're just looking at shadows trying to figure it out.
Nope, I totally get it. And guys, speaking, trying to figure it out, it's been an hour, and I'm almost empty here. And so, you know, it's funny. I don't even watch the clock. I look. Yeah.
And sorry about blowing your rating there, Jeff.
No, totally okay. I did a whole episode on swearing with a comedian. It was fun. We talked about like the nature of it. I think we're living in such an interesting time right now. And I mean, specifically now in the last 2 months, a time of innovation, a time when people have said, I want to work on things that I've never had time for because like I was working or I had this or I had that. And so great. And if podcasting calls to you, by all means, there's always room for a good one.
Yeah.
Right. There's no room for, like, oh, hey, bro, what'd you do this weekend? Yeah. There's no room for that. There's plenty of that crap out there. Mm-hmm. But if you've got some sort of innovation, something to say, my goodness, right? Like Willie Nelson summed it up best when he said, you can't make a record if you ain't got nothing to say. Mm-hmm. Right? That's it. That's it right there. You got to have something to say before you step to the microphone, before you start writing a book, before you start writing an article, before you get on a stage in front of people to present some information. You got to have something to say. So think about it. Chew on it. Listen to these greats, you know, that have been doing it a while and getting better every single day. I mean, that's the thing, you know. So guys, thanks for joining me for drinks.
Thank you.
Then again, let's get some shameless plugs in real quick. There's Tony, realghoststoriesonline.com, and of course, thegravetalks.com, jimherald.com, and his virtual vampiregroup.com. You can check out all that stuff. Their podcasts are available pretty much everywhere you get podcasts, whether it's iTunes or Google or Apple Podcasts. Sorry, iTunes is dead now. I keep forgetting. Forgive me. But thank you guys for listening. Thanks for all the fun stuff you're doing. And just a reminder, you can check me out. There's me. I didn't get many plugs in for me, guys. You guys could have tooted my horn a little
Jeff
more.
JeffBelanger.com. Be sure to check it out. He has a great newsletter.
This is great. It was
and
fun
great
to turn
podcast,
the
New England Legends, wherever you get your podcast.
This was fun. No, guys, it's funny. I've always been on the other end of you. So it was.
That doesn't sound too good.
No, it doesn't. Not at all. And
that's the ringtone right there.
hey, what the? So it's fun to. What the hell is that? Do you have like the little thing?
Yeah, I've got the whole thing.
You could have used that all night and you only use it now?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, man. Talk about saving the best for last. Well, very good. Thank you, guys. Thank you, everybody. And also, if you want to tip your bartender, Venmo tips are accepted. Appreciate it. And we're going to keep doing these. Wednesday night, by the way, we're going to have Bridget Marcourt. Remember the Girls Next Door E-Channel? I've got a funny Bridget story from like that show. And actually she's going to be coming on to talk about haunts. She's into haunts and haunted places and stuff like that. So she's going to be Wednesday night. And I've been doing this. It's just turned into like every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 7 o'clock because we're locked in. We want to feel social. We want to feel connected. And so I'm grateful that you guys came to hang out with us tonight. Tell your friends, tell others about us. Keep sharing, keep listening, keep podcasting. And everybody, until next time, take it easy.